anyways, so alternative and Angelo. Angelo started what, 2-3 companies over the course of the last 10 years?
Over the past 10 years, two. But okay, over the past 25, maybe half a dozen.
Okay.
So most of them failed, but that's how it works.
Yeah.
So you try and then you try again.
All right. Yep. So he's going to present on getting started. So I'll just turn it over to you. And, so feel free to interrupt and ask questions. This isn't super strict here. So.
Yep. Well, hi, everybody. And anytime, interrupt me and ask questions. So today's topic is your startup in AWS, how to make your account lean and mean. And the idea is to really squeeze as much savings as you can out of the account. It just passed the slide. And part of the reason we really want to think about saving money, especially when a startup, is that we don't want to burn money. We want to save it because it's better used on labor. It's better used on infrastructure for doing something innovative. And the simple stuff like doing sign-in, stuff like that, that should not cost much, if at all. So what I'm going to tell you today is how I run my business, my latest startup, where the lower environment, the dev environment, is less than $20 a month, and production is at about $100. And actually, when I show you the slide, it's a little more now. But I've been keeping it really tight on the wallet.
How many subscribers?
Few free, but I'm still working on getting some paid subscribers, but we're getting there. So we're still in let me focus on this. So, and this is before credits. So, just talking about my startup, I'm trying to get to the vitality. So I have lots of interest before I start charging. So here's the plan. First, we want to create a culture at our company or organization, or if you're bootstrapped, just when you work with contractors, on creating a culture where you're trying to save money as you develop. The second is we want to architect everything so we're in a path where we can use infrastructure wisely in a more efficient way. And the third thing is once we start to, we've launched and we've built something, we want to have a backlog of tons of things we know we can do that will further help us save money. So, hi, I'm Angelo. We already kind of went over my name. This is a bit of information about my background, my startup, and my education. I think probably the most important thing is the one startup I got involved in. It was bootstrapped in 2005 as Blueberry Podcasting. With that, it was a lot of experience of really being lean and mean back then, and that was before the cloud. And actually tie that in 2007, you can imagine in the podcast industry, we needed more storage, and Amazon came in at the right time with the product S3, and that's how we got sucked into it. And I've been developing on AWS since. Let's see. Oh, and a couple other details. Obviously, we talked about Community Day. I'm one of the organizers, as well as Nathan, and I run the Columbus User Group. So just real quick, if you're going to be in the Columbus area and you have a topic you'd like to share with us, get a hold of myself or one of the other organizers. We'd love to have you. So let's talk about culture. And I really wanted a better slide, but I couldn't come up with a better slide for culture. But the important thing about creating a culture is that you're encouraging everybody that works with you to speak up. It's been interesting doing contract work too over the past few years, because I'll work with people that they'll kind of say to me like, oh, if only we did this, but like, don't tell me, tell your manager. And some of these companies just don't have that culture where people feel comfortable talking about sharing either their ideas or their cost ideas. And a lot of that is just incubating and creating that atmosphere where people feel A, welcome, but B, encouraged to talk about their ideas and thoughts. So to get there, you want to obviously be transparent. You want to give, if you have to trust everybody, and you want to give them access to all the costs involved with your bill. Obviously, if you scale out and you become a large company, You can still do this, but do it by department or do it by project, but you still have to give people some responsibility for what things cost. And then they're going to start thinking about, wow, this has cost more than my car. Maybe there's something we could do to get the cost down. It's also a good idea to create a meeting cadence. And in that meeting, that's where you're encouraging thoughts and processes from your employees and staff or volunteers to say, hey, here's opportunities we can save money. This is what we could redevelop. This is another service we could use to cut costs. And in these conversations too, you want to involve the stakeholders, people that are also involved in the company, maybe not necessarily customers, depends on what you're doing, but definitely other people that are involved. They might have a say too, and sometimes they'll say, we don't want you to change this because I'd rather spend more money than redevelop something or recode something. And that's okay, that's part of that conversation. And you obviously want to create feedback. You want to create that environment again that people feel like you're being listened to and you're taking their feedback seriously. So another thing that we'll want to do is incentivize your staff, your team, to share their ideas on how to save money. Things you can do is talk about how, and this is just a fact of life, if you're able to cut like your server infrastructure down in half, you're literally saving the environment by using half the amount of electricity that you were before. Just that little detail. There's lots of other things that help the environment too. So with a lot of people, this is a personal feeling that they have. You can use that, and you really are helping the environment by saving money and using less resources. You can come up with a team reward or do something to recognize folks and say, hey, we saved $10,000 on our bill. Let's all go out for pizza or whatever you want to do to try to incentivize that. I prefer this method of incentivizing teams because then you're getting everybody working together to say, let's try to save some money. Let's make things more efficient. But you can also do awards and bonuses. And sometimes that can be individual or for the whole team. And it's probably going beyond what you guys are expected, but you want to create a culture where everyone's self-aware. You're going to have employees screw up. They're going to leave a volume in the EC2 that's not mounted. It's sitting there. It was supposed to be deleted for 2 months, and it racks up the bill. That's okay. You have your meeting about it and you use it as a positive and say, all right, we're going to come up with a new way of addressing these kind of things that get through the cracks. So that kind of leads with collaboration and good communication and encourages innovative thinking as well. And believe it or not, that also helps kind of get people thinking about innovating and productivity. So, innovating. Does anybody know why I put sliced bread up here? I hope you've heard the saying that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And that's really what we're all doing as startups and businesses that are creating a startup, is we're trying to come up with the next great big thing in whatever the industry is or whatever we're doing. So with that in mind, let's move into how we're going to save costs. Now, believe it or not, my philosophy is don't worry about costs until you have something working. So don't immediately stop innovating and trying to come up with something cool or awesome until you've actually done that. Then you can start thinking about the costs. Because if you don't create something of value, it didn't matter that you can make it even more efficient or save money. You still have to focus on the main thing, which is innovate. And as soon as you have something that's worth or valuable to somebody, launch it, get it out there. Then we can talk about documenting all the things that you use Cognito for your users to sign in, and that can get kind of costly. So we can revisit that later. Maybe we can come up with a way to save money there. That's the stuff you want to document and get done later. So, like I was saying, you don't want to implement the efficiencies right away, but you want to start making that backlog. You're going to put it in, assume everybody uses Jira, some other kind of system for managing their tasks. You're going to put these in there. You're going to prioritize them, and you're going to put the ones that are the most, they're going to give you the most bang for the buck near the top. And you'll find probably somewhere within a couple of months, you'll start hitting some of these items that could save you money. So I know we were talking about let's be efficient. And I think, and maybe not based on the audience here, you guys are asking me, why am I not worried about efficiency from the beginning? Hopefully, I've sold you on the idea of that you really have to make something innovative first. But just in case, this is your chance to ask me why. And if not, that's awesome. And actually, is everybody here in a startup or starting something now, or? Okay, awesome. And then I guess the rest of you have already in a startup that's I guess past that vitality stage, you're starting to sell your service? Or are you just in the thinking stage? Well, all right. Oh, what's that?
I just someone has to participate. Sell.
Sell, yeah. Well, so when do we start saving then? Because I just told you, don't worry about it first until you launch. It's immediately after you've done something innovative and you start getting traction. So there's no, again, there's no sense putting a lot of effort into saving money if what you built, there's no interest in it. You would have spent a lot of time for no reason to save on infrastructure costs when it might be something that you have to rewrite or redo to readdress that particular need. So, but how do we get to that point where we can save money with what we build on in the cloud? I'm sure you've heard Amazon talk about the decoupled architecture. I didn't call it that when I was younger in my career, but the idea is you break your project into as many smaller modules or pieces. That way you can focus on one while others can sit there that they work, they're not broken, so you just leave them be. So there's efficiency with that as far as development, and there's also efficiency there where you can find commonality where you can save money. So templating, I'm sure you've heard this before. If you can template your infrastructure, you can save money. And I'll give an example on that, but basically, you don't have to keep, especially in your lower environments, you don't have to keep all your infrastructure living there every day, 7 days a week. With my startup, sometimes I will leave the DevOps section down for months until I'm ready to change something, and then I'll spin it all up, do some changes, and spin it down in a couple hours, and then I'm done. So it's also another cost savings in the early days is to do as much as you can with serverless. If you create Lambda functions, use DynamoDB, you really aren't using resources until you get a lot of traffic, a lot of usage. So when you're trying to really proof out something, serverless gives you a real opportunity to do it at a very low cost. And share resources. So when I say share resources, I'm thinking you put all your containers in one box, or you put all your applications like Laravel or whatnot on one box, make it all work on one machine, and I'll have other reasons why that becomes very useful as well. So I know some people have told me, but if I do this, isn't it going to slow down dev? Technically, it shouldn't. When you're doing all this, you're also doing some of the other legwork that you need to do anyway, such as, you're going to figure out how your company's going to scale. So for example, with my startup, I might have two different applications running on the same box, but I know when I get to a certain number of customers, I'm splitting that out. It's going to be on separate machines, separate auto-scaling groups. You're going to come up with your disaster recovery plan at this time, and you're also going to identify things that you have to have for your service level agreement that has to literally never go down. So, and believe it or not, with this approach, you will be able to innovate faster. So I've seen a lot of companies where they've done monolith type building of an application that put everything in one actual application. And sometimes they never even launch. So if you can separate everything and do it in pieces, I guarantee later when you're trying to innovate one feature in one part of it, you'll be able to get that feature out faster than if you had one large application. So before I get through the other half here, do we have questions? Yeah.
What do you actually mean by keeping it separate? Do you have an example? Because I'm not a tech guy.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out what exactly you mean by that.
Yeah, I will use my company's example here in a little bit. But for example, all the accounts and the way people sign into my service, it's a separate project. So once I've established how someone can sign in, log in, and then I can share that session among all the other different pieces of applications that I have in my service, then that is done. And sometimes I'm only touching it just to change the template for the welcome email or something like that. Or you have to touch it for compliance. That actually kind of winding back to the podcast startup, we made the account application also tied to the user dashboard, which I wish we didn't do that, but at the time we were more concerned about the podcasting part, the production, but it meant that we had to make changes to what users saw at the same time when we were changing stuff for GDPR in 2018. And if we decoupled that early on, we would have been able to do the GDPR stuff out within 2 or 3 weeks, but instead we had a whole bunch of other things we had to change at the same time because they were coupled together. So anytime that you can take a piece of your application and basically split it, that's decoupled architecture. And then there's different levels of how you do it. The best way is either with an API. Some will share a database. You're still using the same database, but they're still separate applications. So it depends on your approach and what you're architecting, but you can come up with real clever ways how to separate things, which again, speed up development. In AWS Bedrock, yeah,
models.
Yeah, you could, but that's more for your, and actually that's the interesting thing. Amazon services themselves are already separate by design, decoupled. So like when you're working with Bedrock, you're only working with Bedrock. So in theory, you only have one application that interacts with that. So when it comes time to make any changes, you're just changing that app that interacts with Bedrock. For that specific reason, for example. Yeah. Any other questions about infrastructure and decoupling? Everyone here is obviously interested in developing on Amazon, if AWS, if they're not already. So you're probably already exposed to a lot of these terms. But hopefully, I'm kind of sinking in like, this is the real value of a decoupled architecture. And at first, it seems like more work. But once you get into it, you'll find out, wait a minute, we can make one change in one area and not have to touch everything else. This is awesome. So with the decoupled architecture, you're actually able to innovate faster by the example we just talked about. You're separating complexity into little pieces. You're able to focus on innovating. So taking my Painless Analytics web analytics service, I'm focusing on the processing project because that's where I'm really making headroads on coming up with new ways and new metrics to provide for web analytics. It also gives you flexibility on scaling. If you decouple everything, your account login system might only need like one server and it's good, but the part where people are viewing metrics or whatnot, it's overloaded. You'll set that to auto scale and you'll keep your login system on a really low cost economic machine. And obviously independent development. That means you can have a different team work on each different project separately, which if you think about it, if one person's on working on sign-ins and another person's working on how the metrics are loaded, you're able to get double the amount released and they can release independently. So architect costs in mind, you want to use low cost resources when possible when you first set up. You want to eliminate idle resources. A good way to do that is to combine things on the same machine. You want to architect lower environments with minimal resources. I'm actually going to show a slide how I do that. And then also, you got to factor in that you're trading certain things with a little more dev time up front. So as long as you know, I'm going to have to put some effort now so I can decouple everything and then figure out how I'm going to stack it up in a compact way is effort up front, but it pays off over the months with giving you more possibilities. So let's talk about my company a little bit more. I split up all my projects into three main silos, and then in there I have separate projects that cover different aspects. So I talked about the dev environment. This is where, believe it or not, you can spend a lot of time and it'll pay off in spades later. So when I first started structuring the company, I immediately made a DevOps project and a dev ENV, which actually is for a local development project. It made it easy for me to hire employees and interns to set up their local environment with all of our projects, set up their database, and get them up and running within about 30 minutes. So, and I still see this today when I do contract work. I spend a day or two still getting each one of their Git projects, checking it out. And I always suggest the different management, I'm like, you know, you can create a bash file or a bat file and run it and download all the Git projects at once. And I can go get coffee or a soda. But it still doesn't become a process that management thinks of. But this saves time, but also goes back to what I was talking about, sharing resources. If you can create your applications all to run on one machine, like on my laptop, I can run all of these systems on the one machine, then you just figured out how you're going to do it in your dev environment as well as your local environment. And you don't have to worry about when you talk to an employee and say, can we get this done? Can you get it set up? Because it's already set up. It's now a matter of having that meeting and saying, this is the issue, let's get into it. So the second silo I have is I singled out the logging and the tracking. That's where, talking about SLA, I cannot have an outage. I cannot lose data. When I'm tracking things that are happening on other people's websites, it cannot go down. But I made some hard decisions. One is that I'm okay with this being high available, but the processing part of it, people are just going to have to wait sometimes till the evening when I can get some instances that are lower cost to catch up on all the processing of the log data. So that's a decision I made as in a startup phase so I can keep costs really low. And then the service side of it is what users see. The processor is what generates the analytics. The account is what I kind of talked about. It handles the sign-ins and keeps everything nice and tidy. I'm able to integrate Google Authenticator. All that stuff is built into that. And actually, a beautiful thing with that is then my next project, I'll actually lift and shift that into it. And I already got that piece ready for the next startup, for example. And then the dashboard. That's actually like the React front end, and the API works with that dashboard. That's where people actually view the analytics. So all this I did with, all of this I did with Node.js, which I usually use in Lambda functions on low cost. And then other services I did with Laravel, because I could get it done quickly. If you're familiar with Laravel, there's tools to actually literally create accounts for doing the account part. And the API is also a mixture of Laravel as well as Node with Express. Yeah.
Is Laravel separate from AWS or is that within AWS?
Well, it's a separate app or service, yeah.
Like Lambda is with AWS, and, you know, is that?
Oh, I have it running on like an EC2 instance, for example. Yeah, it's a nice way of saying I'm using PHP, which is a swear word to many. And sorry to get sidetracked in Laravel. I really love Laravel coming from a PHP background. It brings the MVC model view controller environment to PHP, which is very C kind of, you're on your own ecosystem. So it brought a lot of maturity to a language that otherwise is chaos, if that makes sense. So, oh, and the databases, I'll use MySQL or MySQL as well as DynamoDB, depending on what application it is. Yeah. Oh, were there other questions too, or did you have another? No. So, one other thing to add on both using Laravel and Node.js as well as React, and I think I have a slide on this, is that all these work locally on my Windows machine. You can easily set this up on a Linux or Apple as well and literally run this locally. Even DynamoDB, there's a version where you can get the Java version of it, run it with Java, and you have DynamoDB running locally. So this is an example how I have it set up in production as well as in the dev environment. And you can see I got one EC2 instance in my dev account, and I got it on like the second smallest instance, like a micro, a T3 micro, I believe. And then I prepaid it real quick. So it's like $3 or $4 a month. And then I just leave it there. For that price, it's not worth hassle. And then everything else, I got it down to the small size. Same with RDS in this test environment or the dev environment. And the serverless, it only works when we're doing testing. So I'm not getting much on the bill on DynamoDB or with Lambda functions as well. Production, on the other hand, I have some pieces that we talked about that I have highly available. So I have an Elastic application load balancer, as well as a lot of stuff in front of that with CloudFront. And that's where, when we get to the third section, I'll talk about opportunities to save money by using these services in a certain order, a certain way. And then I also have one instance in production that's non-critical. Believe it or not, the place where people can sign in, I put as non-critical, but I still have it where if the server goes down, within 5 minutes, it's back up. And I'm not as worried about someone emailing me on the support saying, I couldn't sign in for 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, sorry about that, but I cannot lose their actual data from their website. That's why I made those hard decisions. Oh, and in the DevOps, I meant to delete the one slide and put this one in. The DevOps I only spin up when I'm doing new stuff with DevOps. And actually, that's another thing I found interesting. Some of the contractor work I did last year, the one company I was working with, they literally had DevOps happening in the same place that they're doing development. I totally recommend create a separate account for doing the DevOps so you're not disrupting developers and vice versa. Plus, when DevOps is done, especially in small, medium-sized companies, it was just sitting there idle because we only worked on it for a few weeks and then we moved on to something else. Spin it down. There's no reason for a DevOps environment to be there all the time unless you're literally working on it. So I wanted to give examples of my builds. This is the test environment. I'm pretty proud of that. It's really lean and mean. And when we're talking real lean and mean, this is like, it costs more now to go to Chipotle with my wife. So my production account, on the other hand, this is my latest slide. I'm now over that $100, and I made the mistake of leaving two volumes in the account that needed to be deleted. That's on me. So they were like 200 gigs each. They're 10 cents. You can imagine it adds up. So, but next month it'll be back under 100, I promise. Yeah.
Why am I using this so much and I'm not using it?
Yeah, you can set alerts on your bill. I wasn't going to cover that kind of stuff, but there's some really cool stuff with Cost Explorer. The names are escaping me, but yeah, you can set up an alert with CloudWatch and it'll email you like, hey, your bill's over X, or it's estimated to be over X by the end of the month, which is actually pretty important. I'm going to add that to a slide.
It's like the first thing I do when I set up a bill,
Yeah. Like, darn it. They want my taco money, right? So let me get into this, because I talked about it already a little bit, but the local development environment, how I got it set up. And if you're using other languages, I'm pretty sure Python, you can do the same thing where you can run it locally, Java. I don't know as well with C Sharp. My wife's a C Sharp developer though, so I'll ask her, see what she tells me. But with PHP, you can easily download WAMP server for Windows, and poof, your Laravel site is up online. You can just make a couple Apache config files, make up some local host file name, host names to point to your local version, and you're in business. With Node, I like to actually use Apache from the WAMP server and have it proxy to the port that Node is running on. And the reason for this, same with the React, is that if everything goes through the same port and you set cookies, they'll stay there as you move between the different applications. As soon as you use a different port or you change the host name, obviously the cookies aren't there and you get frustrated from testing and it's not smooth. So if you do this simple thing using Apache proxy config file, you can set up your whole environment locally as if that's being your CloudFront and your auto-scaling group when it's over in AWS. So I kind of mentioned it too. You can run DynamoDB locally. Hopefully everybody knows you can run MySQL locally too on a Windows machine or a Mac. And let me see. Oh, a little bit about the scripts too. I'll do a Git pull on each project. The first thing though I do is have my staff or employee or contractor put in their username, and then it just follows that along with all the Git pulls that I have in the scripts. I also keep a bat version as well as a bash version. That way, if they're on a Mac or Linux, they can still pull all the projects. And then I have one more script that they run that'll populate, which actually works with Laravel, and it populates all the databases with the tables and some pre-data for testing. So some tips. As you're developing, you want to document as much as you can, especially all the things that are critical, policies, security. My wife and I call it a runbook. We also have an Airbnb business, and that's real critical with that as well, as you want to always make sure you're doing the same steps every time. You want to separate the core of your business with everything that's secondary. I kind of use that example of the logging part is critical. I cannot lose that data. But if someone can't sign in for 5 minutes, they'll live. So you want to increment your releases. You want your change logs to be detailed. Hopefully a lot of you guys have a lot of these disciplines already. And you want to always review your infrastructure on a cadence. For example, have someone review it every 6 months or 3 months, as well as yourself. It's always good to have different eyes looking at things. And then only implement high availability where it's absolutely necessary, like I talked about. Those are where a lot of your costs are going to come in, is taking advantage of the beautiful features that Amazon gives you with not having downtime. That comes at a cost. Back in the day, when Amazon first launched, you had to run your own database. You had to build your own MySQL server, get it up on Rhine, then come up with a failover version of the server and set up bin logs to copy them over. It was a hassle. So when RDS came, for an already established business, this was awesome. But if you're still startup mode, if your database is not critical, you could use RDS with just a single database, but do the hour backup option, which is still better than what we had even 12 years ago as a backup. Sometimes we'd only do a backup once a day and only have one copy of the database running. And that was production. So now, well, maybe 15 years ago, but things have come a long way. We have a lot of power, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to use all of it right away with your startup. Okay, let me take a quick break before I talk about this slide and see if there's any questions at this point, because we're about to start talking about how to find savings. Anybody? Okay, so I picked the rocket to kind of show that, hey, we're at the point now where our startup is taking off. We got a lot of sales, we got vitality, we're getting customers. So now we got to think about, where are we going to identify costs now that we're established? So this is where I kind of pull off my developer hat and put on my product owner hat. It's time to start going through that backlog that we created where we saw opportunities to save money and prioritize those. Where are we on time? Let's make sure. I don't want to ruin everybody's night. Yeah. Oh, okay. We're good. All right. So I have a product owner background. I'm actually a certified product owner. And it's real important to kind of prioritize your tasks. You're trying to put value on everything you do. And believe it or not, there'll be opportunities where you'll see, hey, we could save some money if we just code one thing different. And then you'll ask developers to give you an estimate, and that's where you finally get the true value of, do we move forward with this change or not? So you kind of have to think, this is like a product owner view. There's a few other types of mind maps and quadrants that you can use to get the same way. But basically the top two are what we're concerned about. These bottom two, you're not going to touch unless you're literally in the code and you can make that change. It's not worth the effort. So small changes that can make the biggest savings, you're going to want to do those right away, because that can make the difference of having a pizza party every other week at your team meetings versus not, if you can save a couple hundred dollars on your bill. The next one is some big changes that you can make that also have big rewards. You'll want to address those as well. Sometimes that's a kind of a difficult decision because it might pull your team off of something more critical. So the product owner hat goes on and you have to make those hard decisions. Sometimes you leave the number two for a while, but then when you finally get to it, you're like, why didn't I do this sooner? So what kind of changes can we make to our account and where they happen? Basically, the two places that you can look for savings are in the application itself, the parts that you built, and the actual use of the services, the architecture that you're using. So back at the podcast startup that I was at, we recognized in our feed pulling service that there was an opportunity to save on CPU and servers by pulling more feeds with the same resource. If you're curious, PHP has this library called CURL multi, not just CURL, but CURL with an underscore multi feature to it. It basically allowed for multi-threading using CURL to be able to download web pages, and in this case, podcast feeds. So we did some performance testing just with some code that we put together in one day, and we discovered that we could get maybe 10 times what we thought we could do, which immediately we could see the money savings by getting rid of 10 of our servers, so you can imagine. Well, as we kept going through this process of thinking about more optimizations we can make, we got to the point where we were able to go from pulling 5,000 feeds an hour on our server to over 200,000. If you're curious, you can ask me about that after. But let's just say that a lot of podcast feeds are slow, and there's no need to pull them all every hour. You can slow ones, you can kind of put in a list and deal with later. And then the ones that respond quickly, you can easily pull on a regular basis, and there's a few other tricks too. So, which also led to new feature. Later on, we discovered we could monitor podcast feeds and let people know that their feed is slow, which if you're familiar with the podcast app, if you're in the app and you hit refresh and it takes more than a second for the podcast to come up, you're gonna move on. So podcasters need to know this, and it became a pretty popular feature. So architectural changes, which is really the heart of where we all kind of share, not just the application specific, but as Amazon AWS users, this is where we can find more savings. So I'm just giving some quick examples. I'm working on creating a page on my last slide. I'll have a barcode you'll be able to scan, and in a week or so, I'll have an actual page full of different places to save. But with Route 53, if you create alias records, you can save a lot on the actual AWS or DNS lookups. S3, which believe it or not, I find is pretty common where companies will keep setting them up in US East 1 in Virginia, but then their servers are all in Ohio or California. There's costs for that, for accessing it over the internet or over the network. Classifications too. If you're putting files in there and they sit there for weeks or months, there's something better than just throwing an S3. You can set up different classes and save some money. Parameter store secrets. The one client I was helping last year, they were literally having their app, every time a page view came in, query Secrets Manager, and then get that result, then connect to the database. And you shouldn't do that. there's a better way. You can cache it, maybe pull Secrets Manager one, if you really need it aggressively, once an hour or once a day. CloudFront, sometimes people don't configure it optimally. They don't enable the headers. So then every time someone visits your site, they're literally downloading all the files each time, each hit. And CloudWatch, I've seen that actually overused. You do get billed on CloudWatch events, I believe. I don't have the details, but I see people abuse it. It's good to watch your bill, but sometimes it can be overdone and you never see anything from it. EC2, there's the zombie volumes that we talked about. There's also the resource just sitting there not doing anything is kind of a waste of resources. Poor decision on the class or the size of the instance. Hopefully this stuff is more obvious. Load balancer, sometimes you don't need a load balancer, especially if you only have one instance that you're connecting it to. It's almost pointless. You can just have, believe it or not, CloudFront, if that's your entry point, go straight to your server. Am I seeing people now racing home to try to save some money? RDS, I've seen that oversized. It's okay if the CPU spikes every once in a while. It's when it's literally becomes a performance bottleneck, you need to scale it up. Lambda functions, people don't use like the, what is that? The SQL cache. There's lots of opportunities too when you're querying things to cache results or looking up the secrets. You shouldn't be doing that in every Lambda function iteration, especially if it's a high traffic type of Lambda function. And VPC, if you're not aware, there's another opportunity that if you set up your VPC with both IP4 and IP6, you can set up IP6 NAT gateway, and it's free, and you do all your traffic from your private part of your VPC through that gateway, and it won't cost you anything. Where if you set up a normal NAT gateway, all the traffic goes through it, Amazon bills you. So there's different tricks you can do to save money, even with something that you would think you wouldn't have to worry about, or that was even an option. So, money. Hopefully we're all ready to save money. And if you want to save more money, if you're not familiar, which actually I think we put it in the title, didn't we? It's not a surprise. Activate credits. If you have a startup, if you're bootstrapping it, you just need your EIN, your tax identification number. You can apply on Amazon and within 3 days or so, they'll give you $1,000 of credit. Now, if you're a startup where you're getting VC money, it takes a few more steps. And actually, has anybody done that process for, yeah, you have? How long does it take for?
A couple weeks.
Sweet, so yeah, if anybody didn't hear that, it takes a couple weeks. And I believe they'll give you up to $100,000 of credits too. So that's awesome. Oh, per year, it's even better.
Depending.
Yeah. Right. The only drawback is you can't transfer the credits. It goes into your account. I know that part. So, because in the first years they started doing that, they were literally giving people credits, and that became, people were like sharing it, so they had to end that, obviously. So how many people are going to do a startup now and get some credits in the next couple months? Oh, come on. All right. So that's the main process of the slides. Please scan this barcode and visit my site. I'm still working on getting these slides together as a PDF. We're recording this, so actually I'll have a video of this too up online sooner than later. It says on there I won't have it till the end of June. But and also I'm working on, which I should have it up by next week, a really nice page documenting in further details all these different opportunities with AWS services where you can save money. So thank you.